I got a couple of things at my apartment, I said. Drive on by. Let's see if there's anyone watching the old place. Susan turned the car down my street, and we rolled slowly through the rain. The old boarding house huddled stoically beneath the downpour, its gutters gurgling and spouting streams of water. The street lights glowed with silver halos as the rain came down. A bit down from my building, a plain brown sedan was parked, and a couple of shadowy forms could be seen inside it when Susan drove past them. That's them, I said. I recognize one of them from Murphy's unit. Susan let out another breath and drew the car around the corner, parking it along the street. Is there any way to sneak into your place? A back door? I shook my head. No. There's only one door in, and you can see the windows from here. I just need the police not to be looking for a few minutes.
You need a distraction, Tara said. I will do it.
I looked over my shoulder.
I don't want any violence.
She tilted her head to one side, her expression never changing.
Very well, she said. For MacFin's sake, I will do as you say. Open the door.
I stared at her fathomless eyes for a second, searching for any signs of deception or betrayal.
What if Tara was the killer? She had known about MacFin and was able to transform in one fashion or another. She could have committed the murders last month, as well as the one two nights past.
But if so, why had she seemingly sacrificed herself so that MacFin and I could escape? Why had she come to find me?
Then again, MacFin had been captured, and her words at the gas station may have been calculated to make me give up trying to help him, if you looked at them from a certain point of view.
What if she was trying to take care of both MacFin and me by throwing us into the mundane legal system? My head spun with pain and weariness.
Paranoid, Harry, I told myself. You've got to trust someone, somewhere, or else MacFin goes furry and Murphy and a lot of other good people die tonight. There wasn't much choice.
I opened the door, and we both got out of the car.
What are you going to do? I asked Tara.
Instead of answering, the amber-eyed woman stripped off my duster and handed it back to me, leaving herself nude and lovely in the rain.
Do you like to look at my body? She demanded of me.
Careful how you answer that one, Buster, Susan growled from the car.
I coughed and glanced back at Susan, keeping my eyes off the other woman.
Yeah, Tara, that will work fine, I guess.
Wait for 20 slow breaths, she said.
There was a note of amusement in her voice.
Pick me up at the far end of the block.
Then she turned on a bare heel and glided into the darkness between streetlights in a graceful lope.
I frowned after her for a moment, then drew my duster back on.
You don't have to look quite so hard, Susan said. Is she the human interest angle for this story?
I winced, holding my wounded arm close to my side, and leaned down to meet Susan's eyes.
I don't think she's human, I said.
Then I stood and started walking down the street, slowing my steps so I didn't round the corner until Tara's prescribed time limit had elapsed. Even when I did, I walked quickly, like someone hurrying home out of the rain, my hands in my pockets, keeping my head down against the gray downpour. I crossed the street toward my apartment building, glanced at the sedan as I did. The cops weren't watching me. They were staring at a pool of light beneath the streetlight behind them, where Tara spun gracefully through the steps of some sort of gliding dance, moving to a rhythm and a music I could not hear. There was a primal sort of intensity to her emotions, raw sexuality, feminine power coursing through her movements. Her back arched as she spun and whirled, offering out her breasts to the chill rain, and her skin was slick and gleaming with water. I tripped over the curb on the far side of the street and felt my cheeks start to flame as I hurried down to the steps of my apartment. I unlocked the door and went inside, shutting it behind me. I didn't light any candles, relying on my knowledge of the house to move around. The two potions were in their plastic sports bottles on the counter where I had left them. I grabbed up my black nylon backpack from the floor and threw the bottles in. Then I went into my bedroom and grabbed the blue coveralls with the little red patch over one breast pocket stenciled with Mike in bold letters. My mechanic had left them in the trunk of the Blue Beetle the last time the Beetle was in the shop. I added a baseball cap, a first aid kit, a roll of duct tape, a box of chalk, 7 smooth stones from a collection of them I keep in my closet, a white t-shirt and a pair of blue jeans, and a huge bottle of Tylenol, zipped up the backpack and headed back out again. At the last moment, I took up my wizard's staff from the corner by the door. Something flashed past my legs, moving out into the night, and I almost jumped out of my skin. Mister paused at the top of the stairs to look back at me, his cat eyes enigmatic and irritated, and then vanished into the darkness. I muttered something under my breath and locked the door behind me, then headed out once more, my heart rattling along too quickly to be comfortable. Tara was on her hands and knees in the middle of the pool of light behind the sedan, her damp hair fallen all around her face, her lips parted, facing the 2 plainclothes officers who had gotten out of the car and were speaking to her from several feet away. Her chest was heaving in and out, but having seen her in action, I doubted it was merely from the exertion of her dance. Looked nice, though. The policemen were sure as hell staring. I gripped my staff in hand, along with the backpack, and walked away down the street again. It didn't take long to make it back to Susan's car, and she immediately wheeled the vehicle around the block without comment. Susan hardly begun to slow down when Tara appeared from between a couple of buildings and loped over to the car. I leaned forward, opened the door, and she got into the back seat. I threw her the extra clothes I picked up, and she began to dress without comment. "It worked," I said. "We did it." "Of course it worked," Tara said. "Men are foolish. They will stare at anything female and naked." "She's got that right," Susan said under her breath, and jerked the car into the motion again. "Oh, we're going to talk about this one, mister. Next stop, special investigations." Outside the battered old police building downtown, I pulled the baseball cap a little lower over my eyes and drank the blending potion. It really didn't have any taste to it at all, but it twitched and bubbled all the way down my gullet until it hit my stomach. I gave the potion a few seconds to work and shifted my hands on the handle of my wizard staff. Even though the end of it was shoved into a wheeled bucket, it still didn't look much like the handle of a mop. And even though I was dressed in dark blue coveralls, they were ridiculously short on me. I did not look much like a janitor. That's where the magic came in. If the potion worked, I would look like background to any casual observers, a part of the scenery that they would not glance at twice. So long as they didn't give me an intense scrutiny, the potion's power should be able to keep me from being noticed, which would let me get close to Mac Finn, which would let me put in a containment circle around him and keep his transformed self from going on a rampage. Of course, if it didn't work, I might just end up studying the inside of a jail cell for a few years, provided the transformed Mac Finn didn't tear me apart first. I tried to ignore the pain in my shoulder, the nervous tension in my stomach. I was rebandaged, Tylenol'd, and as reasonably refreshed as I could possibly have been without drinking the potion I had brewed just for that purpose. If I could have had both potions going in my system without making me too ill to move, I would have downed the refresher potion the moment I got my hands on it. But without the blending potion, there was no way for me to get inside a Mac Finn. I could only hope that I'd find a use for it eventually. I'd hate the effort to go to waste. I waited impatiently in the rain, sure for a moment that I had messed something up when I'm making the potion, that it wasn't going to have any effect at all. And then I felt it start to work. A sort of a gray feeling came over me, and I realized with a start that the colors were fading from my vision. A sort of listless feeling came over me, a lassitude that advised me to sit down somewhere and watch the world go by. But at the same time, the hairs on the back of my neck prickled up as the potion's magic took effect. I took a deep breath and walked up the stairs of the building with my bucket and my mop, pulled open the doors, and went inside. Shadows shifted and changed oddly, all grays and blacks and whites, and for a second I felt like an extra on the set of Casablanca or the Maltese Falcon. A solid old matron of a sergeant sat at the front desk, thumbing through a glossy magazine, a portrait done in colorless hues. She glanced up at me for a second, and tinges of color returned to her uniform, her cheeks, and her eyes. She looked me over casually, sniffed, and lowered her face to her magazine again. As her attention faded, so did the colors from her clothing and skin. My perceptions of her changed as she paid attention to me or did not. I felt my face stretch in a victorious smile. The potion had worked. I was inside. I had to suppress an urge to break into a soft shoe routine. Sometimes being able to use magic was so cool. I almost stopped hurting for a few seconds, from sheer enjoyment of the special effects. I would have to remember to tell Bob how much I liked the way this potion worked. I kept my head down and moved past the desk sergeant, just one more janitor coming in to clean up the police station after hours. I picked up the bucket and my mop and went up the stairs toward the holding cells and the special investigations offices on the fifth floor. One cop passed me on the stairs and didn't so much as look at me. His uniform and skin remained entirely devoid of color. I grew more confident and moved with more speed. I was effectively invisible. Now, all I had to do was find MacFin, trick my way into seeing him, and save Murphy and all the other police from the monster MacFin would become before they arrested me for trying to do it. And time was running out.